Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming live on the Game Nashville app as well. How's it going? Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson, and Ryan and Marquise are at the Wholesale Inc. Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. I am still broadcasting from the palatial Chase McCabe home studios. Gentlemen, Ryan, Marquise, everybody, how we doing?
Doing pretty well. How are you, Chaser? How's your weekend?
It was a good weekend. A lot of stuff to, you know, I'm noticing that my television watching is more than just Netflix now. I'm able to watch some things. So had a little UFC Saturday night. There was a golf tournament. Had NASCAR, of course. So good weekend. Very good weekend. How about you?
Good deal. I didn't watch much TV over the weekend. Amanda and I had a couples retreat that we went on pre-wedding. And also yesterday went golfing and hung out with some friends. So
nice.
It was a good weekend. Let's not talk about it. It was a rough day on the course. It was bad.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. But last night, then we had another 30 for 30, as there have been a run on these as of late. And this, of the three outside of The Last Dance, this was the one that I was looking forward to the most because I remember this summer, obviously a big baseball fan. So 1998, the film Long Gone Summer, of course, it features Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, and the home run battle. I thought it was well done. I mean, was it the best 30 for 30 they've done? No, but I thought it was good. I really enjoyed it last night. What'd you think?
I went into it with such high expectations for it that I won't say it disappointed, but it did not live up to those expectations for me.
I feel like you do that to yourself a lot, though. Especially when I don't mean that as an insult. I mean that because you're passionate about baseball. Like you are a huge baseball fan. So I feel like you might do that on something that you're passionate about that you maybe put too much into it.
Well, full transparency, for the last few years when you and I either in the office or on the air have discussed what documentaries do we want to see from ESPN in a 30 for 30 setting, the Sosa McGwire 98 home run chase was always one of the first ones that I would bring up. Always.
Yeah.
Because it's such a polarizing moment for sports and baseball as a whole. And look, it was fun to see all the footage that was in and around the stadiums. It was fun to see all the moonshot home runs again from Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. But I thought the documentary itself, it felt a little incomplete. I thought the production of it wasn't great. I thought it was very heavily slanted towards Mark McGwire, that Sammy Sosa, you barely saw any Sammy Sosa in the first 20 or 30 minutes of the documentary.
Yeah.
And I wish there was more balance between McGwire and Sosa. And I thought how they covered those last days before McGwire broke the record, I thought that was probably the best part of the whole thing. But then the whole steroid era, it kind of felt forced into it because maybe they felt like they had to cover it, but I didn't feel like that part was well covered either. So I don't know. The overall production and the jumping around from different topic or different year was more confusing than it was in The Last Dance. The Last Dance made it very clear what was happening at what time, and I don't know. It didn't feel like it was a completed product last night.
So a couple things along those lines. One, and they may have asked him and he declined, I wish Ken Griffey Jr. had been in it. I think that he was a part of that. Even though it came down to those two, I do wish that Ken Griffey Jr. had been in it.
And so you barely would have known that watching it.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're right.
They barely mentioned Ken Griffey Jr.
People forget that it was a three-man race for most of the season.
Really, so, up until about early August.
Yeah, and then Jr. just kind of fell off. So I wish he had been featured. Second part that you just brought up of that it was more tilted towards McGwire and there wasn't as much Sammy Sosa, I think that's actually an underlying theme of the whole film because McGwire has repaired the damage or has done a lot of repairing to the damage. He's back in baseball. He's been a coach in baseball. He has been featured. I mean, he has taken the steps to try and correct some of the mistakes, and I thought he was very honest about it with steroids in this film. It took him a while to finally admit it, as we know, but I think that he was honest about it. Sosa hasn't really done that. I mean, Sosa, you know, it was. I guess I never really realized that he hasn't been back at Wrigley since, you know, in 10 years or more.
Yeah, I hadn't realized that either.
So I think you see just by what you just said of that Sosa wasn't featured as much as McGuire. Well, it's because McGuire and baseball have kind of patched things up. Sosa and baseball haven't.
Well, don't you think it would be different, though, if Sosa was the one who first broke Roger Maris's record?
Possibly.
Because when you bring up the 98 home run chase, the first person you think of is McGuire because of number 62.
Right.
And if Sosa was the one who hit that, then I feel like it would have been heavily slanted towards Sosa and not McGuire.
But yeah, you may be onto that.
But it just felt like the whole film that it was geared towards Mark McGuire and that, oh, yeah, here's Sammy Sosa and Wrigley and Chicago. We have to mention him because he was a part of this, but this is mainly Mark McGuire. That's just the way it kind of felt watching it.
Well, I also forgot. Yeah, and you're right. And I forgot how much of a personality Sammy Sosa had too. I mean, I thought really brought out in this. So, you know, and you could see how that Mark McGuire really didn't have one.
Right.
So that was interesting. I know. I see what you're saying.
I also wish that they would have delved deeper into the Cardinals-Cubs aspect of that home run chase, because it wasn't just two home run hitters, legendary home run hitters. It was within one of the best rivalries in baseball history. And it was mentioned a few times, but I didn't feel like the documentary highlighted that aspect of it. So it just it was a fun watch. It was pretty good. I rated it a B. But if they had done some other things to maybe polish it up, maybe it could have been a two-part where the second part is the steroid era and the first part was all the home run chase. Maybe it would have felt more complete. But overall, it was a fun 2 hours to go down that memory lane, and I'm very glad that there was only one home run that they showed in the entire documentary that was hit off the Cincinnati Reds.
I knew that was going to work its way in at some point. What did you think about the part where when McGuire broke it, and I didn't have a problem with Sosa coming in and congratulating him and giving him a hug. I know some people did. I didn't have a problem with that, but he's high-fiving all the Cubs as he goes around the bases. And I thought that was interesting. Like, you're in the midst of a game with an arch rivalry. I get it's history, but, you know, and they talked, there were a couple of people that talked about that. I thought that was kind of I forgot about that. I forgot when it happened that there was a lot of that. What did you make of that? Just two rivalries, and then he hits a home run, breaks a record, and they're kind of being all buddy-buddy.
I mean, I think that shows the respect that his arch nemesis had for him breaking that record.
Is it more respect for him or respect just for the game of how big of a deal that was?
Probably both. Probably both. I mean, look, they made it pretty clear in that documentary of how difficult it was for Mark McGuire to persevere through all the mental hurdles to get to not only 62, but to 70.
Yeah.
That the pressure was on him from the start of spring training, that there were magazine covers and headlines of this is the year that Mark McGuire is going to break Roger Maris's record, and he is a team guy that didn't want the spotlight to be on him, and the spotlight was on him from the word go. So that was a very difficult and impressive achievement that he conquered by getting to 62. So I don't have a problem with him high-fiving Cubs players. I mean, Cubs players were the ones coming up to him.
Sure.
And saying, hey, congratulations, this is really cool. And that was really probably going to be their only moment to do something like that before he got mobbed by his teammates and you know, went into the crowd to see Roger Maris's kids. You know what, kind of along the same lines, what was really interesting to go back and see was, for instance, when Sammy Sosa hit 66 in Houston to take the lead for just a couple hours before Mark McGwire tied him back up, was the amount of people in Houston rooting for Sammy Sosa. Even Astros fans were holding up signs of Sosa 66 or, you know, let's go Sammy. Like, Astros fans in their own stadium were rooting for Sammy Sosa to hit home runs.
Yeah.
Like, that was remarkable.
I mean, I would have, you know, if I had been at a Braves game in the midst of this with either one of them, I mean, I know there would be a part of me that goes, yeah, I kind of want to see him hit a home run. I mean, I know they're playing my team, but and I want my team to win, but I still want to see a home run, you know, because it's history. You're just at that point, you're a part of history no matter what. Mm-hmm. So I get that part of it. The big question in all of this, and I know it's one that's going to be up for debate, and you look at the numbers. I mean, number one, I forgot Sosa won the MVP that year. That I was reminded of that. So that Sosa was MVP in the midst of this home run race. But the question is always going to be, should they be in the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Absolutely yes. I have no qualms about it. If you want to put an asterisk or put, you know, use steroids or steroid era or whatever makes you feel better, fine. Do it. But they should be in Cooperstown.
Not only those two, but Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. Anybody who was a part of all of that and has the numbers and are worthy of being in the Hall of Fame, they should have, like you said, an asterisk or a steroid era wing of the Baseball Hall of Fame, but you can't tell the history of baseball or the home run. And the home run is the most popular thing within baseball without discussing Sosa, McGwire, and Bonds.
Yeah. I mean, they hold the records. And, you know, here's also part of this, too. You know, Bonds, like, I don't like Barry Bonds. I don't think Barry Bonds is a very good person. I think he's a jerk. McGwire was that way at times or could be perceived that way. But like I said, McGwire has taken the right steps to repair some of that. So when I look at them, when I look at all three of them, it's very easy for me to go, yeah, McGwire should be in. I mean, he's okay. You know, you feel better, like, because he's repaired some things. Bonds is Bonds. Sosa is Sosa. So I still say all three, though, and Clemens, you know, when you're talking about pitching. I just don't understand. The old guard needs to get out of the way and allow this, and they need to do whatever they need to do for eligibility purposes and have these guys in. It's silly. The ones that have been voted in have deserved it, don't get me wrong, but the fact that you have three of the best hitters of all time and one of the best pitchers of all time, and they're not in Cooperstown yet, is a travesty. So that is our question. If you want to weigh in on that, 615-737-1025 on our text line, should McGwire and Sosa be in the Hall of Fame? Let us know what you think. And when we come back, the latest on Major League Baseball. Do we have to? Yeah, we do. Yeah, okay. We'll do that when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. RockNashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiative, CDC updates, ways to donate to Second Harvest Food Bank of Middle Tennessee to support their mission of feeding hungry people, as well as other ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's RockNashville.com. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson, and the face that runs the place, Chase McCabe, here with you. Now, Ryan, before we get into the update on baseball, you have a Mark McGwire story that you wanted to share.
Well, you texted me during the break and said and asked, did you ever see one of them play? And, you know, living in Cincinnati, my dad and I had half-season tickets to see the Reds every weekend. And the Cubs and the Cardinals would come in a lot since the Reds were in the Central Division with them. And I remember seeing Mark McGwire. This would have been in the 2000 season. So a couple years after he broke the record, and this is about when he started his downward trajectory. But a lot of the baseballs that he hit still had a very large upward trajectory. And he hit one. I don't know if you recall Riverfront Stadium, which was then Synergy Field.
Yep.
he hit one into the red seats. And the red seats were the upper deck. In Cincinnati, it was the blue seats, then the green seats, then the yellow seats. And my dad and I had the half-season tickets in the yellow seats and then the red seats. And he hit one, I have to think, 10 rows up in the red seats. And it was one of the most amazing, majestic home runs I have ever seen in my entire life. We could not believe that he hit one that high and that far inside that stadium. So
a moonshot.
Oh, it was the definition of moonshot. And then in one of the first years in Great American Ballpark, when Sosa was still hitting moonshots, I think his is still one of the top two or three home runs in terms of length in Great American Ballpark history, where he hit one over the batter's eye in center field.
Wow.
Which, yeah, in today's world, he would have hit one onto the riverboat that sits on top, right, of that batter's eye. But back then, that riverboat was not there. So I believe he hit it on top of or over the batter's eye.
Yeah. I saw I didn't see McGuire. McGuire hit... He hadn't officially retired, but it was looking like he was going to. I saw the Cardinals and the Mets in early 2002 at Shea, so he may have retired. I can't remember. I know he was pretty much done at that point. But I saw Sosa with the iCubs at some point at Greer he was on a rehab assignment. So that was the only time I saw Sammy Sosa. So, and he was of the two, you know, I was kind of pulling for him. Was always a big Sosa fan, but there you go. Some stories of memory lane. Now, unfortunately, we have to get to the reality that is Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association and their continued spat during a pandemic and trying to get back to playing. Another proposal was submitted by the owners. The players said no and basically have now said, set a schedule. We're tired of going back and forth. And so it's looking like a short season for Major League Baseball, if that is, in fact, what ends up happening.
Man, this is embarrassing.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It's so embarrassing to see what is happening with Major League Baseball and the Players Union. And, you know, the Players Union wants the Major League Baseball plan today by the close of business. So maybe we will learn something today and have some sort of finality to the labor dispute of 2020, and that's not to say that there may not be one in 2021, but this is just so disheartening. You know, we speak on the Sosa McGuire home run chase as two individuals that just love the sport of baseball, and to watch what's happening with the sport of baseball this summer, or should we say what's not happening with the sport of baseball, the fact that there won't be baseball on July 4th weekend like we were hoping there would be. It's really disheartening. And I've been, you know, kind of harping on the players over the last couple months, but at this point it's on everybody. And Rob Manfred through this is not looking good at all.
I can tell you right now, I'm not a fan of his.
No,
just in how he's
not at
handled
all.
This. Yeah, no, and I brought this up the other day. Carl Ravitch did the interview with him during the draft, and Ravi went after him, and he should have. I mean, kudos to him. I it was probably a tough position to be in, but and then I saw Carl Ravitch tweet maybe Friday night and say, "I love baseball, but I don't like them very much right now," and I'm right there with him. And I think you are too. I think a lot of people are. And, you know, SportsCenter's doing this big special tonight with all the commissioners of the leagues, and Manfred's going to be a part of it. If you're Gary Bettman or Adam Silver, you know, how do you look at Rob Manfred right now and what's going on in his sport? I mean, the others have gone through tough times to figure this out. I mean, the negotiations, I wouldn't say have been easy by any means. But they figured it out. They got it done. They have a plan in place. And then here comes old Rob walking in. Yeah, hey, what's up, guys? Nah, we don't have anything right now. I mean, what do you think goes through their minds when they see what's going on with baseball?
I'm sure they shake their head. Because I'm sure with those situations like the National Hockey League or the NFL or the NBA, I'm sure behind closed doors, a lot of those conversations weren't – you know, weren't PG. Let me just put it that way.
Sure.
And none of that has really come out through all this process. You know, I'm sure there are things that the NHLPA does not like about the NHL proposal to return, but it's not like we're seeing this war of words in the media between the players and the owners. Same with the NBA. Well, you know, we'll get to that here in a few minutes and what's happening with Kyrie Irving, but just overall in both sports, there doesn't seem to be a lot of hatred between the players' unions or the league. But when you get to Major League Baseball, it is so obvious that neither side trusts or really respects the other side. And I know that's been a lot of years in the making, that we're going back to 1981 and back to 1994 for all of these hard feelings. But yeah, I mean, if you're Bettman or you're Adam Silver or you're Roger Goodell and you see what's happening in baseball, they just have to shake their head. Or at least you would think.
I know if I were one of those guys, you know, when the cameras aren't rolling, I'd look at Manfred and I'd go, hey, you need to get your beep together. Because we're living in a world now where solidarity is a very big thing. Trying to bring everybody together, everybody get on the same page. Well, I think with the major sports, it should be the same thing. I mean, especially right now with the pandemic and, you know, we've had that discussion of sports bringing people together. And then if I'm them, I'm pissed. I mean, I look at Manfred and baseball and go, you are screwing this up for not only yourselves, but pro sports in general. Even though we're going to be back, we're going to be playing, it'll be fine for us. But like, we need everybody on the same page, and you guys can't figure your house out.
I see what you're saying there, but if you're Gary Bettman, wouldn't you sit back and in your head just be like, man, he can't figure it out, but also be like, well, if there's no baseball, that means more eyeballs on our product.
And that's true. That's it. That's true.
So
and
I don't know
if they have to capitalize on that.
Yeah, I don't know if the commissioners would be going as far as what you're saying, as far as being ticked off at Major League Baseball. I mean, yeah, it sucks for sports as a whole, but for some of the individual sports like the NHL, they could benefit from having more eyeballs on their product in late July or early August if baseball still isn't playing by then.
Yeah, and I can say this, an entity that is definitely upset with Major League Baseball, the network that Rob Manfred will be going on tonight is probably one of those. I would say Fox is another one of those entities. TBS, all the television partners of Major League Baseball are sitting there going, really? Really? This is what you're going to do right now? Really? And now we're going to have a 48 or 50 game season? Cool. Great story, bro. I mean, that's just it, and it's like us. It's just frustration at this point. And I thought what Ravitch said, I love baseball, but I don't like them very much right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think is very, very poetic. It's true. It's just very true because that's how we all feel. There's another negative story connected with baseball that we must discuss. We'll get into the NBA stuff a little bit later on, but Yankees and sign stealing. We'll discuss that when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. It's time to tell you about our Dad Rocks the Gold Contest. Enter for a chance to win Dad a Pred Store gift card for $75. All you have to do is submit a photo of your dad rocking the gold on Twitter. Tag us at 102.5 The Game and use the hashtag Dad Rocks the Gold. You can also submit a photo to our website at thegamenashville.com. Get your submission in today as the contest closes on Friday afternoon. $75 gift card to the Pred Store on the line. Cool prize for dad just in time for Father's Day. So another scandal involving Major League Baseball and sign stealing, this time with the New York Yankees. A New York judge ruled on Friday that a letter sent by Major League Baseball, this coming from The Athletic, from Rob Manfred to the Yankees, basically is going to be unsealed. That's what a judge is saying. The Yankees obviously don't want that unsealed because of what the letter says and what everything, you know, has been found comes out. So I can understand that, but at the same time, now I want to see it. But Ryan, you wanted to set something up that about a guest that you guys had on your Home Plate podcast a few months ago that could pertain to this.
Well, and before we get to that, this is all it's. the timing of this is funny because Houston and the Astros and the Red Sox have been busted for sign stealing in recent months, and a lot of Yankees fans have come out saying, "Oh, well, look at you guys. You know, we want a a redo of the 2017 ALCS between the Yankees and the Astros." And now this comes out, and you mentioned the Athletic story, and I just laugh at the quotes coming from the Yankees, either from the lawyer who represents the Yankees or the Yankees official who spoke anonymously, who said, "We're not doing this to cover up some smoking gun." And that is in relation to the Yankees trying to avoid this letter from being revealed to the public, because the Yankees argued the letter would cause, quote, significant reputational injury. Well, right. Yeah, they don't want this to be revealed. And yes, baseball fans want it to be revealed. And I do find it funny that Major League Baseball doesn't want it revealed, because the Yankees are its storied franchise. If this was the Baltimore Orioles, do you think we'd be going through this? No, we'd already know about it.
If it was any other team, I mean, maybe the Cubs. You know, I think you put the historic teams in their own little bubble, and baseball will try and protect them, but especially the New York Yankees.
But they didn't try to protect
the
Red Sox.
That's true. That's true. They didn't.
And the Red Sox are right up there with the Yankees in terms of history. So the conduct that the Yankees were cited for occurred in 2015 and 2016, and Major League Baseball significantly updated its rules regarding electronic sign stealing after the 2017 season. Now, when you look at the 2017 ALCS, the New York Yankees in four games in Houston scored three runs. In three games at home, the New York Yankees against the Astros scored 19 runs. You can't tell me there's not something fishy there when it comes to all these sign-stealing allegations towards the New York Yankees. So say all that to set up Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray was on the 2017 New York Yankees that faced the Houston Astros in the ALCS. And myself and Calvin Smith, we did a podcast called the Home Plate Podcast, where we talked a lot of local baseball. And we had Sonny Gray on with us back in January when all of this was really coming to a head with the Houston Astros. And that's when the reports came out and all the videos surfaced on social media of the trash can banging. And I asked Sonny Gray whether or not he ever felt like it was happening when he was on the mound facing the Houston Astros. And after he went down the road of how this has kind of always been a part of baseball, how in the lower levels of either minor leagues or even back when he was in middle school or high school, that he would at second base try to pick up some sort of advantage. After he went through that, he then addressed what was being reported on in Major League Baseball, and here's what Sonny Gray had to say.
You know, I think it was just maybe one of those things that we came in with too much technology too fast, and there was zero stipulations and rules, and people didn't really know how to handle it. And I mean, I think it was very evident. I mean, I've definitely seen the use of instant replay cameras and heard of the use of instant replay cameras and the access that you have at your fingertips. I mean, it's kind of crazy if you think about it. You walk down the dugout and you turn around to the right and you literally in the middle of a game, you have access to 18 different camera angles, and everything in the stadium is getting filmed, and you get to watch all of it. I can throw an inning, and then I can come back down, or a hitter can hit, and then he can walk to the bottom of a dugout and watch everything that just happened. And then there's also people who are watching that as it unfolds live. So I mean, it's kind of like, at the end of the day, it's kind of like you get introduced to a whole bunch of technology at one time, and it was no real rules. No one really knew what was kind of going on, and I think people just kind of took advantage of a system and used it in ways that it's not supposed to be used. And I mean, that's kind of, I mean, I haven't dug in too deep on it, but I do think that it definitely got used in a way that it wasn't intended on being used. And it was always one of them things that everyone heard about, everyone talked about, everyone kind of was aware of, but no one really was going to say anything. No one really knew what was going, you know what I mean? No one wanted to put their name to it, I guess. I guess it kind of unfolded the last week or so, or I know that it's been going on for a while, but it's kind of started unfolding everything. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know what's going to happen, but it'll be interesting.
Sonny Gray on the Home Plate podcast with Ryan Porth and Calvin Smith. Baseball taking advantage of a system. Interesting. Never heard that before.
Well, and we brought it up in the context of the Houston Astros getting busted for it, and a lot of Yankees fans were really ticked off back in January that they lost the ALCS that October in seven games to the Astros. The fact that the Astros had some sort of advantage over them. And when you think of what I just stated about the dichotomy of the games in Houston versus the games in New York, where 19 runs in three games at home for the Yankees and then three runs in four games in Houston, that's fishy right off the bat. And then you hear Sonny Gray, who was a member of the Yankees back then, say that they were aware of it, they talked about it. I mean, he didn't dodge the question. He also didn't go after the Astros. He didn't say, you know, we were really ticked off when we heard the news here in the last couple weeks that the Astros did this. There was none of that. He basically said that all of the technology has been used probably improperly, but, you know, there were no rules against it, so, you know, everyone kind of did it. That's kind of the gist that I got out of that Sonny Gray clip.
Where have we heard this before in baseball? Where have we heard that before? Sounds familiar. That type of argument.
Correct.
I mean, it's just funny how it's not funny, I guess, but the similarities between the two cases. But the difference is, I mean, with this one, this is blatant. They're both cheating, I guess, but this is just blatant cheating. You know what I mean?
If that letter comes out and it is as bad or worse than the Astros, what they did, it's going to look so bad on Rob Manfred. Because it is evident that Rob Manfred knew about this and did not want this to come out. And if Rob Manfred was covering up a sign-stealing scandal on the heels of everything that's going on right now with Major League Baseball, holy smokes, there is going to be a ton of backlash towards MLB's commissioner.
So let me ask you this, because you've been a baseball fan your entire life, just like I have. And you know, this is a perfect tie-in with the Sosa McGuire. You live the steroid era. We all kind of knew. You didn't know who you did. I mean, but it was there. There was a cloud. I mean, they even talked about the Andro being in McGuire's locker and all that. But everybody pretty much kind of figured something was going on. This is a little different because it came out. And then it became, well, I wonder if other teams were doing it. But Bud Selig, I think everybody kind of knew. He knew what was up and didn't want to enforce it because he knew that it was helping his game and it was bringing them out of what had happened in 94 and people were watching baseball again. So it was one of those, we're just going to kind of look the other way as long as we can. So you have that on Bud Selig. Then you have this on Rob Manfred. At the end of the day, for you, a baseball fan, Ryan, which one is more egregious?
I would probably say Rob Manfred.
I would agree with you.
I would probably say that because, look, the steroid era, as tainted as it may be, there were no rules against using PEDs in baseball. I mean, Brady Anderson was someone that everyone speculated, during his 50-plus home run season for the Orioles. Kind of out of nowhere. I mean, a lot of players used PEDs back then in baseball. It was tough to know back then and now in present day what was real and what wasn't real. And it doesn't just stop with Sosa and McGuire.
Sure.
So there were no rules with it. So yes, it looks bad, and it looks especially bad when you lie about it and then you have to come back and then admit to it. That looks even worse. But if you're the commissioner and you were covering up a sign-stealing scandal, especially after what just happened with the Astros and the Red Sox, where A.J. Hinch and Alex Cora got fired because of it, that is going to be a huge black eye on Rob Manfred.
Oh, yeah, and it may be one he can't come back from.
I agree.
I think on top of what's happening right now in the midst of a pandemic and then all this stuff, it is feasible, in my opinion, to say that a year or so from now, he may not be the commissioner, if I'm just being honest. And that's why I asked that. That's why I did the comp. That's why I did the comparison. Because if I'm being completely honest with you, yes, using steroids is a form of cheating. It's wrong. It taints those records. But at the same time, if I never found out about it and just always had that suspicion, I would have been fine. I wouldn't have cared. It was entertaining. The home run is the ultimate thing that we want to see at a baseball game. You can use whatever phrase you want to use about a home run. We love home runs. So it was entertaining, and I will always remember 1998 in that home run race. So at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, okay, I get it. You can look at those records and go, okay, what's real, what's not? But it doesn't bother me like this did. I think this is much worse. So, and if the Yankees did it, then they deserve whatever's coming their way. They deserve to have that letter release. They deserve to go through what Houston has gone through. The mighty Yankees. I mean, they deserve it. Mm-hmm. So I think they should get theirs. If there's a lot of egregious things in that letter, but Rob Manfred should then have to pay the fine too. Have to pay whatever the price is for his role. And if he knew about it and he was like, oh, okay, we got to hide this. We don't need another scandal. You know, what always gets people, Ryan? The cover up.
Mm-hmm.
That's what always gets people. So that I believe they have until June 19th and to release it, which basically means it's going to come out eventually. So,
and that's this week.
Yep, that is this week. So it is June 15th, 615 day. So
yep, and I do wonder if this does come out, does Joe Girardi ever manage a game for the Philadelphia Phillies?
Ooh.
Because he would have been the manager in 2017.
That's a good question. Man, it's another, and, you know, oof, I didn't even think about that.
I mean, well, Carlos Beltran,
yeah,
when he was a part of it with the Astros, I mean, immediately the Mets had to find a new manager. And he was gone.
He gone. And probably won't get another shot.
Probably not.
Well, very interesting, and we'll see what ends up happening. When we come back, players' concerns about the bubble. We'll do that next. ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Stop by and eat with us, game partner, to eat, dine in, or carry out, and get a sticker from the restaurant and add it to your card. Take a picture and post it on Twitter using the hashtag #EatWithUs and tag us at 102.5 The Game, the Preds at Preds NHL, and the restaurant itself. Secure 8 stickers, receive a Preds prize pack. Secure all 16 stickers and receive a Preds player autographed puck. To see participating restaurants and to print out the card, visit thegamenashville.com. Welcome back into the Rundown. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson back at the Wholesale Link Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. Ryan is there too. You have a big, big show coming up tonight at 6 o'clock, Preds Insiders, and a very special guest. Right, Ryan?
Yes, I am very happy to have Ryan Johansson on Preds Insiders tonight. So that should be a lot of fun. Tune in at 6. We're going to get into a bevy of different things, including Roman Yossi for Norris and the return to play format and how things have been going on for him in quarantine, and, you know, have him kind of go into what the regular season was like before the pause for not only the team but for him as well. So should be an interesting conversation with Ryan Johansson coming up at 6 o'clock tonight.
And then I believe it is 4 o'clock. John Hines on with Jared and the GM.
That is correct.
So you're got some Preds flavor for you this afternoon with John Hines at 4 on Jared and the GM and Ryan Johansson at 6 with Ryan on Preds Insiders. So we know that the NHL has a return to play plan. We know that the NBA has a return to play plan, MLS as well. Baseball, still waiting on you. And I'm going to continue to beat on you until you actually get a plan. So there you go. NBA, though, there are some players that are concerned about playing in the bubble, including Kyrie Irving, Adrian Woj, we'll call him Woj, from ESPN. I knew I was going to do that. He talked about those concerns on ESPN.
The league expected this. The union expected this, that there would be players who, for a variety of reasons, would not want to enter the bubble. But there comes a point where the league has to start imagining how many players it would take to stay home and how many elite level, upper level players in the league it would take to stay home for the league to have to reconsider whether they're going to go forward with restarting the season in Orlando.
Now, this is something that we have discussed. I've brought this up. I know several others have brought this up. Okay, what if you have high profile players that end up saying, yeah, I don't know. I'm not feeling this. I'm a little nervous. I'm not going to play. What does that do? What ends up happening then? Now, Marquise, you've been following this closely with Kyrie Irving. He wasn't going anyway because he's hurt, correct? Yeah.
Yes, basically. So, I mean, like, so injured players, inactive players are not allowed in the bubble, pretty much. So if you're inactive, they're just trying to limit the people that are going to this event, obviously. So if you're inactive, you can't go. And you're not going to play anyway, so it doesn't matter. So, yeah, Kyrie, at first, 10 days ago, he was cool with it, you know, because he voted. He's a vice president. So he was in these calls and in these meetings that they agreed to this plan to return to play. And then 10 days later, and all this was going on, mind you. So the fact that he's using the, you know, we don't want to distract from the Black Lives Matter movement. All this stuff was happening 10 days ago when they agreed to do this whole thing in the first place. So I think now he's just like, oh, so I can't go? I can't go? Oh, okay. Cool. We're not going to go at all. How about that? No one's going. I'm not invited to the party.
Go, nobody can.
This party's canceled. and that's basically what he's doing. Now, there's players who agree with it. You know, Steven Jackson, who's been very vocal about it, former NBA player, NBA All-Star champion. And he was very outspoken in saying the players, you know, shouldn't play. Dwight Howard has some quotes on CNN that, you know, he agreed and said he couldn't play. And that's fine. But there's also players like Patrick Beverley's like, hey, man. If LeBron say we hooping, we hooping. And that's what he tweeted. And so there's players on both sides of the spectrum, and that's fine because when all this started to happen, we knew that we were going to have some players who felt comfortable going, some players that didn't feel comfortable. Obviously, it's for different circumstances, you know, with this situation. But I just don't think it's going to be a distraction because NBA always finds ways to implement, you know, something when it comes to issues going on in the world. They've always found ways to implement that. So that's why I'm like, Kyrie, just knock it off, man.
So, Chase, you brought this up from an NHL perspective maybe 2 months ago.
Yeah, and I even asked Elliot Friedman about it last week.
Yeah, and I think the situation that you proposed to me is, what if Connor McDavid says no? And I was like, well, they're going to continue to play. You're not going to... You're not going to just not have hockey because one star player comes out and says that they're not going to play. Now, if it grows out of control.
Multiple star players.
If it grows to be out of control in the NHL's case or the NBA's case, then maybe you have to come up with something to appease the players' union in either the NBA or the NHL. But if one or two players, whether they are star players or role players, come out and say, I'm not playing because of this, within the return to play format and the fact that there are restrictions on family members visiting during those times, I don't think that's going to halt the NBA or NHL's resumption of play.
Yeah, I don't either. I think at the end of the day, they're all going to realize that there's too much to lose. Now, with that said, and I stand by this, and Elliot agreed with me, this was a debate Darren and I had last week when I said, I would almost guarantee that there's going to be some players that stay back because they're not comfortable for whatever reason. there are a myriad of reasons that they don't play. I think that's going to happen in both sports, and I still feel that way. But I believe overall the leagues are going
to
play.
To you, what's a number of players?
I don't know. I mean, with all the teams returning, it could be feasible that you may have somewhere in the range of 10 that just say, you know, whether it's a health condition or a family member that has a health condition or what have you. I mean, like I said, there could be different reasons. I mean, if there's maybe 10 to 15 somewhere in that range, then I mean, I could see that happening. That's kind of where I look at it. And could one of those be a superstar? Sure. But I think that if you didn't realistically feel that way when this started, that, I mean, that's a little naive. I mean, people have the right to their opinions and to be concerned about, you know, a pandemic going on and not wanting to risk them their health or their family's health. So, I mean, I get it. So I just, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a handful, I guess 10's a handful, that don't go because of that.
10 is an overflowing handful, but I don't think 10 is enough to, you know, sound alarms for either league.
If it's 10 superstars, then that could be a different conversation. But when I say 10, I just mean 10
overall.
So that's kind of how I look at it. But, you know, I get it. It's a weird time, but at the same time, you have to, if you feel like it's somewhat safe, then I think you have to play because it's going to be good for the league and good for the country. Because as we talk about, sports helps people out, brings people together. That's going to do it for this edition of The Rundown. Have a great Monday, but stick around. Darren Donick and Chase, that's next on ESPN 1025 The Game.